Joshua chapter 9. Now we've been preaching through the book of Joshua. The book of Joshua is a recorded history of Israel's conquest of the promised land, of their inheritance that God had given to them. And it's a battle. And they're not fighting the battle in order that they might gain the land. They're fighting the battle because it is theirs. It's given. God told them, I have given this to you. And you have to walk on it. And you've got to take it. Well, you said if he's just given it to us, why didn't he just run all the giants off and run all the problems off and run everything off that's in the way and let him go in and sit down? If that were the case, you would never get to know our God. The way of redemption and the way of salvation and the way of knowing God is a way of faith. And so he allows these challenges. He allows these problems. He even uses the devil as his own instrument to demonstrate his goodness and his power, that we might know what a great God we serve and his love and power for us, instrumental in all things. And so we have been preaching through these chapters with these historical events, each of them giving us a type and figure of a type of things that we will run into in our conquest of our spiritual inheritance in Christ in this present life. The peace, the joy, the victory in Christ Jesus over the problems of this present life. Now, this section that we're dealing with right now, after the conquest of Jericho, Jericho has fallen, they've crossed the Jordan, Jericho has fallen, Ai has fallen. But now here's something new that has come up. These kings in the land have found out what's happened, they're scared. And so they get together and say, we've got to get together and defeat these Israelites. We've got to stop them some way. And so they all gather together to unite themselves together to stop Israel, except for one particular group that we call the Gibeonites. And they had another plan. And they saw what God has done for Israel so far, and they said, no use trying to fight these people. Everybody else has. They got killed. And we don't have a chance. The best thing we can do is try to make a deal with them and see if they'll let us live. And so this is what they did. They came and dressed up in old clothes and took old food and old wine bags and made like they'd come from a far country and long ways off, and they wanted to make a deal with them and make a contract. So they got fooled them into doing that. So Joshua did that, and then they found out 3 days later that they were part of the land, and they were set out to be destroyed. But they'd already sworn to them that they had to let them live. And so we learn from this that there are two types of adversaries, many adversaries, but only two types of adversaries we will face in our Christian life. The first type is that adversary who will never give up. He will never make any kind of agreement or compromise. He'll never relent. He's set on destroying us and will be set on not satisfied with nothing less than that. And then there's another type of adversary that we have that'll make a deal with us, a compromise. And that is the Gibeonites, the one that we're dealing with right now. So you have these two, those kind that won't compromise, that's going to fight, that's the devil. The prince of the power there, demons. They set on destroying us, and they'll never make a deal with us. They'll try to deceive us, but they won't give in and never will rest. They're going to fight us as long as we live. But also we have these Gibeonites. And so Joshua, after he'd found out he already made a deal with them, couldn't destroy them, he made slaves of them. He enslaved them and made carriers of water and hewers of wood for the service of the altar of the Lord. Now we will take this up in Joshua chapter 9, verse 21. And the ruler said to them, let them live, talking about the Gibeonites, because they've already made a contract with them. They're going to let them live. But let them live, but let them be woodcutters and water carriers for all the congregation as the rulers had promised them. Then Joshua called for them, and he spoke to them, saying, Why have you deceived us, saying, We are very far from you when you dwell near us? Now therefore you are cursed, and none of you shall be freed from being slaves, woodcutters and water carriers for the house of my God. And so they answered Joshua and said, Because it was certainly told your servants that the Lord your God commanded his servant Moses to give you all the land and to destroy all the inhabitants of the land from before you. Therefore we were very much afraid for our lives because of you and have done this thing. And now here we are in your hands. Do with us as it seems good and right to do to us. So he did to them and delivered them out of the hand of the children of Israel so that they did not kill them. And that day Joshua made them woodcutters and water carriers for the congregation for the altar of the Lord in the place which he would choose even to this day. Now it came to pass when Adonai Zedek, the king of Jerusalem, heard how Joshua had taken Ai and had utterly destroyed it as he had done to Jericho and its king, so he had done to Ai and its king, and how the inhabitants of Gibeon had made peace with Israel and were among them, that they feared greatly, because Gibeon was a great city, like one of the royal cities, because it was greater than Ai, and all its men were mighty. Therefore Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, sent to Hoham, king of Hebron, Piram, king of Jamath, Jepiah, king of Lachish, and Deber, king of Eglon, saying, Come up to me and help me, that we may attack Gibeon, for it has made peace with Joshua and with the children of Israel. Therefore the five kings of the Amorites, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon, gathered together and went up, and they all their armies encamped before Gibeon and made war against it. And the men of Gibeon sent to Joshua at the camp of Gilgal, saying, Do not forsake your servants. Come up quickly. Save us and help us, for all the kings of the Amorites who dwell in the mountains have gathered together against us. Now, we noted last week, as we've already said, that that uncompromising enemy, that won't give up, won't make a deal, is the devil and the powers of darkness. These are the ones that are going to fight. They're going to have to fight all the time. Who then is the one who compromises and makes a deal with us and we let live? Well, the Bible tells us we only have three elements that are opposed to us: the world, the flesh, and the devil. And we know who the devil is. He's the one not going to give up. So those other two have to be the ones that the Gibeonites represent. That is, our mortal bodies and this present world in which we live. Our mortal bodies, the Bible sometimes calls the flesh, is not spiritual, not ever going to be spiritual. It's never going to be converted. It's going to die and be buried. But until that time in our present life, it becomes pretty much of a thing that we have to struggle with. It's what gives us our sin problem. It's the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, the pride of life that we have with this mortal body. And in times past, when we were not Christians, we yielded our body to serve sin. But now the Bible tells us the same members of your body that in the time past you yielded to serve sin, what do you do now? You make slaves of your body to serve Christ. The same thing that opposed you, you use it to serve the Lord with. Instead of using your eyes and your hands and your feet and your mind to serve the devil and to oppose your spiritual inheritance, you use it to serve the Lord. The same thing is true with our worldly possessions. What we have, the house we live in, the cars we drive, the clothes we wear, the food we eat, everything that we have to have living in this present world. Instead of using those things and letting those things destroy us, we employ those very same things to help us serve the Lord. You understand that? Everybody got that. That's very important. So what is Israel going to say now? Well, you know, we made a bad deal. These fellows snookered us, and we spared them, and so we're not going to kill them. But after all, it worked out pretty good. We got somebody to chop all our wood and draw all our water. Now, I told you last week that in those days, that's no small order. Doesn't mean much to you today. You don't chop wood or draw water. All you go do is turn the tap on, get all the water you want. You don't go down and pick the water up out of a spring or tote it from the river or how to pull it up out of a well. And you don't have to chop wood. All you got to do is turn the switch on, turn the gas on, light it. You got all the fire and energy you need. But in those days, up until this time, it's a big problem to have enough water, do all the washing, all the cooking, all the drinking, all the cleansing, everything, have enough fuel, do all the heating and cooking and washing and cleansing and all of that. Big job. So you got somebody to do the work for you. That's great. You got some slaves. So we see that our imprudence and our prayerlessness that gets us in these fix, our pride and our confidence in the flesh, our mistakes and our sins, and we make plenty of them. We make plenty of them. They are paid for by Christ and do not affect our acceptance before God, but sometimes they leave lifelong handicaps and burdens which we have to live with. They do not frustrate the purpose of God. In fact, He employs, are you listening now? He employs our blunders to His glory and our salvation and to meet our needs. That is an awesome thing. He takes the very blunders and mistakes, the sins that I make, and turns them around and uses them to conform me to His image. Now, there are continuous ongoing hazards in employing the world and the flesh in serving God. But that's exactly what we do. The world and the flesh are both self-serving, interested in themselves and nothing else, utterly unspiritual, have no understanding and no interest, no concord whatsoever in spiritual realities. They are deceptive and seductive. And we may be, and often are, subtly seduced into serving them, that is, the world and the flesh, rather than enslaving them to serve God. For instance, they both appeal mightily to the flesh, fleshy lust. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. These are the engines of sin and of spiritual ruin. They will hoodwink us into thinking that they are serving God when they're only harnessing us to serve them. That's a terrible thing. That we come into bondage to the very thing that ought to be in bondage to us. We'll kid ourselves if we're not careful in the thinking and believing that. Now, we must live and work and minister in this present evil world. It is the arena that is this world, is the arena in which our faith shall be proved. Our witness and testimony shall be made known. And our race is run. And we're all in that right now. Your faith is being proved right now. Your witness and your testimony is ongoing right now. And you are running your race right now. There will be a day when it's be finished. But you're in the business of running your race right now. Therefore, we use this world and its substance in the service of the altar of our God. 1 Corinthians 7:31, we read that last week, as that we are to be as those using the world, but not abusing or misusing it. We are not to abuse it. We are to be good stewards of God's creation, God's material bounty, not destroyers of it. But we must be careful that we do not become slaves to it and idolaters and worshipers of the creation. Nor can we ever be a part of this evil world system. Listen to me, saints. If you have any interest in the living God, if there's a righteous bone in your body, if your conscience has any inclination toward truth and reality, you can never be a part of this evil world system. Do you sometimes feel like you a misfit? That you just don't fit? You try to fit in, but everything goes around you or contrary to you, and you feel like you're standing alone. Well, that's the way you're supposed to feel in this present evil world. You're not a part of it. And you must hope that you don't ever get to be a part of it. That does not mean that you will not have a place of rest and peace. Yes, have that. But in Christ, it isn't becoming a part of this world system. The body of flesh is our tabernacle in this present life. In times past, we were enslaved by its lust. No longer. We now present our bodies as living sacrifices to God. Romans 12 and 1, we keep going back to that. And I've thought on that passage many, many, many times, often thought of it, through my sojourn. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice acceptable unto God, which is your only reasonable service. Now, after you have presented your body to God, it isn't yours any longer. You don't have any veto power over what's done with it. You don't have any say on what happens to it. You put it in His hands. Twice a month, we generally have a common meal here. And everybody brings a meal and whatever they're going to bring, and they put it and they present it to the meal. Well, you don't stand there by your dish and say, now, tell everybody, you got to eat this, and this is the way you eat it, and don't get that, get this. No, you've presented it, you're done with that. You left it. You have contributed that to the whole meal. This is what is, you present your bodies to God. It's His responsibility. What He does with it from then on, don't be quarreling with Him about it. Fussing about it. This is what we're talking about. Servants, we yield our members as servants to righteousness. I no longer use my eye, my hands, my mouth, my mind as tools and instruments for wickedness to satisfy myself, but to serve the living God. This is what we're talking about. These are our Gibeonites. You understand that? But the flesh has to be constantly mortified to serve and worship God. Otherwise, we'll be seduced into serving it. What am I talking about? Our appetites. Our pleasures. Our addictions. Yes? Our obsessions. Our pride. Our ambitions. Our moods. Our self-conceits and self-centeredness. Those things have to be constantly brought down to death. They rise up every time you turn around. And your body's not going to serve God unless you deal with those things and bring them under subjection to the yoke of Christ. I'm talking about your Gibeonites if you're going to enslave them to serve the Lord. Now, there's another prominent hazard posed by the Gibeonites. And this is the one that our text deals with us today. No sooner do we find ourselves endowed with woodchoppers and water boys to help us to get our work done than the devil comes and attacks them. You see, this is what happened. these five kings over here said, hey, those Gibeonites have made a pact with Israel. And they powerful. They're bigger than they are. They're bigger than Jericho. And they're on their side. So we've got to destroy them. Now the devil, demons, cannot destroy our souls and spirits. He can't get to that. He can't touch them. So they fly into the material things of this present world that we hold. The very ones we have conscripted to aid us in our Christian walk and our witness. He comes and attacks those and destroys those. And you can think about the Israelites now, and they said, you know, this wasn't too bad a deal after all. After, you know, we can give all our energies to fighting now. These Gibeonites, they're going to chop our wood, and they're going to carry our water, and they're going to take care of that. But you know, the first thing that happened, they probably hadn't chopped a rick of wood yet. They carried a bucket of water, and the first thing you know, here come a messenger running from him. Hey, come help us! These kings are trying to kill us! And so they've got to leave what they're doing and go over there and rescue their Gibeonites. You see what the devil has done? Our energies and our attentions is drawn off to protecting and preserving our Gibeonites, our woodchoppers and water boys. We worry, we fret, we spend, and are spent insuring. The more you got, the more insurance you got to buy to keep some lawyer from suing you or getting in trouble so you don't lose it. Right? Sorry, brother. Got an insurance salesman in here. I know. I've already read all that part of this world system. That's the way it runs. Repairing, replacing, enhancing, updating, sheltering our worldly goods. Then the devil and demons comes and attacks our mortal bodies, which we have devoted to serving the Lord. Here, Lord, you can have my body. I've presented my body a living sacrifice. You can have it to serve you. And so he comes and attacks our mortal bodies. Now, we're duty bound to keep it healthy, defend and protect it. And there's nothing wrong with that. You ought to do that. One young preacher, he ain't young anymore, when he was young, told me that he was in a meeting one time when Dr. J.P. Macbeth, I'm not sure about the initials, Dr. Macbeth, I never met him, but he was a preacher who was a medical doctor, and he's probably a better doctor than he was a preacher. But he was a pretty good preacher and pretty well known. He heard him preach one time, and after the meeting was over, he went back to the back to talk to Dr. Macbeth, and he said, Dr. Macbeth, I'm just a young preacher, just began to serve the Lord, and the Lord has used you, you're an old man, and I'd like to have you, if you have any word to help me and exhort me, give me some instructions on some help in what I should do to serve the Lord the best. And Dr. Macbeth was rather busy. He said, young man, do you eat white bread? He said, yes, sir. He said, do you know that white bread's not good for you? He said, yes, sir. He said, well, no use me talking to you anymore. You're all doing what you don't do, right? You won't do what you know what to do. If you won't do that, why should I tell you anything else? Now, we should not abuse our bodies. We ought to take care of them. It's the only one you're going to have. But our energies and devotion, if we're not careful, be found to be obsessed, focused on not on Christ and truth, but drawn off to fighting injuries, diseases, infections, and old age. And the principle now to be learned from this, Gibeonite slaves, which may be employed to help us serve the Lord, are often more liability than asset. The devil, that adversary that will not relent or compromise, can work great havoc with our spiritual life with these Gibeonites. He's therefore very busy producing, inventing, and peddling to us more Gibeonites, which we foolishly think will help us spiritually, but which in reality will make his slaves, his own slaves, to ensnare us. And we'll be snookered into thinking we're better off with more and better Gibeonites. Are our mortal bodies employed to serve God? Then the devil will get us obsessed with improving and protecting it. In order to improve our brains and our knowledge, we get snookered into the higher education trap, the scholarly stance. We buy books by the armloads and programs on computers. We chase after seminars and clinics, trying to learn all how to do spiritual things. You can go in a bookstore. Oh, you're just like a kid in a candy store there. It tells you all kinds of books on how to do and accomplish any spiritual thing you want to do. And you can just go in there with buckets and carry out all these books and tapes and videos that tell you how to really get the job done. Isn't it amazing that we've got all this modern stuff that people never had in times past? We must be the most spiritual, efficient, godly generation that's ever lived. To have a better body with which to serve God, we spend endless hours chasing after health fads, foods, supplements, snake oil. This will cure anything. Makes everybody feel better. All you got to do is drink it, sup it, cook it, eat it, chew it, rub it on. Exercise and bodybuilding therapies. We polish up our appearance with beauty aids, fancy garments, or find out how to look cool and acceptable in the world. And all we do with this stuff is attract more flesh that has no interest in the living God. May we use the material things of this world in service to our God? Fine. Then the devil will parade an endless plethora of stuff before our eyes at which we think will better enable us to serve God. Present day popular churchianity is drowning in this claptrap of technology that is supposed to enhance our worship and make us better Christians and more efficient soul winning. Elaborate buildings. Oh, boy, they got some beautiful ones now. Architecture, aesthetics, comfort, fun, excitement, lighting, and atmosphere. All of this is supposed to make us more spiritual and more effective in worshiping God and getting folks to come to the Lord. Music, soundtracks, the best talent in the entertainment world is captured on electronics to help us worship. We're choreographed by slides and projectors into puppet-like performance drawn into meaningless mantra chanting. We still use this, folks, you see this? You know what that is? You know what this is? This is a hymnal. It has hymns in it that you can turn and sing. Most churches don't have these anymore. They're too much trouble. They got a fellow sitting back in the back with a projector, and you've got these little ditties on that you focus on the wall, and everybody's standing up, and they can see it, and they're big there, and you can see them. And they got the band over here with the drums and the horns and all of that stuff with you know, the jivey stuff. And you stand there, and this is worship. Lights, colors, strobes, all of that. You don't have it? Oh, my, you're missing out. This helps us so much. Even the hymnals. I go in some churches where they got two. We got a supplement. I go in some where they've got about four or five of these. You know, I learned something years ago. I'm getting into something here, this matter of simplicity of worship. To get together with a group, and we didn't even have hymn books. Or if we had to, we used hymns that we knew by heart. And we wouldn't sit there looking at that, reading it, looking at the music. You've read it over 1,000 times. But you could just sing it without looking at a book. And sometimes we didn't even have a musician. And, oh, you can't do that a cappella without a musician. Why not? Yes, you can. Just to the Lord. You know that you can sing to the Lord driving along in a car, in your shower, on your bed, wherever you're working, whatever, you can sing to the Lord. You know those things. And sometimes some of the best worship times you have is then, when you don't have all the Gibeonites to help you. They become snares to us and entangled in these things. I thank God for the helps that we have. And we have to learn no matter. God gives us some. But once again, the devil make a mess out of anything and run it to extremes. You see this? I do that on my computer. 40 years... I used a pen and scratched a piece of paper. My sermons for 40 years on little half a sheet. I tear a half sheet of paper, write on both sides of it. My notes, that's what I preached on for 40 years until I got snookered into getting a computer. Now, I work all week on my sermon. I'm putting it on the computer. And if I don't, I'm careful to print that thing out quick, the computer liable to go out and I've lost it all. It took me a long time to be able to try to think and pray spiritually and at the same time figure out how to key that computer. I overcome it, but I finally managed to use that Gibeonite. A big job. You know, it's amazing how great God is to overcome all the stumbling blocks we throw in His way to cause us to worship Him and walk with Him and live with Him. I was in a church one time out west, way out west in Wyoming, and the piano player had to leave, and they didn't have another pianist, and they didn't know how in the world they were going to sing without a piano player. And so they had the piano player tape a whole bunch of hymns on a cassette tape. So when they come to the worship service, they put that cassette tape in, and you were chained to that cassette trying to sing something. I said, throw that thing away. Sing what you can. You're chained to something. You're not worshiping God. You're worshiping a machine. We have no mind, soul, or energy left for God. It's all concentrated in keeping our Gibeonites in top performance. The bottom line in all of this is that we get further and further from God and true spiritual worship. It is not the altar of the living God that is served, but the altars of all this claptrap. Now, I know I'm going to sound like a sour old man that's mad, and I'm not. I'm just trying to help us. The overall lesson in this whole thing is that we should keep our work and our worship as simple and as unencumbered with flesh and things as is possible. When we dress, when we take care of our bodies, we ought to be clean. We ought to dress neat, so we don't have to be strutting, painted up, polished up peacocks. Our buildings and whatever we have, serviceable, as comfortable, as necessary, and that's all we need. More and better flesh, more and better worldly technology is not a help but a handicap. I was thinking about this the other day when we saw this new technology up there in North Mississippi. You know that we could have a digital camera out there and it could be focused on me while I'm preaching, and it would record it all. And you could put it on the computer, if he's got the technology on his computer to receive it, and he can sit there at home and be just like he's in the worship right here. If you've got the technology to receive it, and we can afford the technology to get it to you, wouldn't it be better just come and be with the saints? There's no substitute for that. I thank God for tapes, or cassette tapes. I thought it was kind of silly when they first come out. You got to pay $2 for just one cassette tape when you take $2, Joe, and had a whole reel-to-reel that big long with a dozen sermons on it. But we go to the cassettes. They're a little cheaper now. So we live with those things. But the less care given to our mortal flesh and its adornment, the better. The less, the more spoiled and covered, the natural instruments we employ, the better. Do you know that God is not concerned or impressed with our performances or our productions? He desires us to be focused on Him. Him. He wants us to be thinking about Him. He doesn't want us to put on a big program for Him, to entertain and impress Him. He isn't really interested in how much we get done, how many souls we win, how we change the world. No. They that come to God must believe that He is, and He's a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. If a man going to rejoice in Him, let him rejoice that he knows God. He wants us to know Him, to worship Him. He desires us to be focused on Him. We must constantly remind ourselves that God is enough. Hard to remember that in this kind of world in the United States of America. God bless America. Hard for us to remember that. It wouldn't be so hard if you're in Afghanistan. Some of these third world countries, that God is enough. That's pretty good. He has promised. I repeat it, He has promised to be with us. What else could you have better than that? What could improve on that? I will be with you. There shall not a man stand before you all the days of your life. Nothing can stand before you if I am with you in your conquest and walk with me. We need no more of the flesh and the world that He has endowed us with. This one body is enough as it is. That which He has given us. That's what He means is be content with such things as you have, which He preserves and enables us. The Church of the Living God, as O.B.B. Caldwell used to say with Joe, is no more nor no less than the shepherd and his sheep. Amen. I want us to